It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to episode number 27 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
We have a lot to talk about today, Carson. Gen Con was just a couple weeks ago, and we saw an early release of X-Wing Wave 9.
And luckily, you brought some back for us to test out, get our first impressions.
Today, we're going to focus in on our first impressions of Wave 9, especially with the list we have been testing. And we also have some big show-related news that you guys will definitely want to stay tuned for.
We'll just leave that teaser there and get on to the Wave 9 discussion.
So, Carson, after I brought back the Wave 9 ships from Gen Con, what was the first pack you opened up to start list building with?
Well, I opened up the Protectorate Starfighter pack because it's a cool ship with a lot of fun options, and it also comes with the Fearlessness card, which I wanted to try out on the Dual Aggressor list.
Yes, and can you tell our listeners what is Fearlessness?
It's a 1-point elite pilot talent upgrade card for scum only. When attacking, if you are inside the defender's firing arc at range 1 and the defender is inside your firing arc, you may add 1 hit result to your roll.
And now that ability will sound kind of familiar to a lot of our listeners. It kind of mirrors the Conquered Dawn Protector title that comes with the Protectorate Starfighter, which reads essentially the same, except that instead of adding a hit result, you're actually adding an evade result when you're being attacked.
And this doesn't just up your potential damage output, it's always happening when you get that ability to trigger,
which pushes up your potential damage output by an extra hit. So let's say you're running one of the generic Protectorate Starfighters that has an elite pilot talent slot, like the Conquered Dawn Veteran. If you have Fearlessness on there, its normal base attack value is 3. So if you get a shot in at range 1, you're rolling 4 dice, which means you have a potential damage output of 4 hits. Fearlessness ups that potential damage output without having to actually add any dice to your attack rolls. So you could potentially do 5 damage, or in the case of when you're flying Fenrau, who already gets an extra attack dice on top of his normal range 1 bonus, you can do up to 6 damage if you're using this Fearlessness elite pilot talent.
Well, and it also raises your minimum damage because you're always going to get that hit.
Yes, even if it gets evaded or not.
If you roll 4 blanks with your attack dice, you still get that 1 hit added on afterwards.
And at just 1 point, it is a pretty great value, but there are some limitations, especially when looking at the range and the fact that it's taking up your elite pilot talent slot, which is a very valuable slot in X-Wing.
For the Dual Aggressors, they're trying to max up all their upgrades, so you really only have room for a 1, maybe a 2-point elite pilot talent, in my opinion. And because it is taking up that slot where you can put cards like Crackshot or Veteran Instincts to increase their pilot skill, this card really does need to do a lot of work.
So can you just remind our listeners, before you started using Fearlessness, what was your standard build for your Dual Aggressor list?
Crackshot, Heavy Laser Cannon, Fire Control System, Auto Thrusters, Glitter Stim, and the IG 2000 title.
And you always used IGB as long with either A or C or sometimes even D.
Right.
So in this case, you're saying you're going to swap out your standard Crackshot loadout for another equally valued 1-point elite pilot talent card, which is the Fearlessness card.
So using the Heavy Laser Cannon build with B and Auto Thrusters, you really want to engage at range 3. 2 is okay because you're still in range of your Heavy Laser Cannon. At range 1, you're limited to just using your primary weapon, and so you don't get IGB's pilot ability, which is after you perform an attack that doesn't hit, you may perform a secondary weapon attack with a cannon.
Yeah, so there's that potential risk, because you prefer, when possible, to be taking shots at range 3, mostly because it will allow you to trigger auto thrusters when you're being return shotted, but it also allows you to trigger that IGB ability to take that second shot after you miss. You run the risk at range 1, you're still rolling 4 attack dice, even though you're not using the heavy laser cannon, you've got the extra bonus from range 1, but you run the risk that if the shot misses, you roll a couple blanks and then reroll with your target lock and you still blank out a couple times, the shot could be evaded and you'll have no recourse, no damage output that turn.
And so the best way to combat the list was get into range 1 where my advantages really fall apart. So I thought Fearless might be a nice complement to the aggressor strategy where it's a nice plan B for when a ship does get into range 1. Yes, I lose IGB's ability to hit them with a heavy laser cannon, but now I get to add an extra hit to my die result.
So now that you've tried this out, do you feel like that's the case here? Do you feel like it gives you an edge at that range 1 encounter?
Yes, it gives you an edge in the range 1 encounter. Overall, though, I felt like it was weaker than Crackshot.
Why?
Crackshot was a guaranteed damage at some point in the game. And usually I want to do that damage on the first turn of shooting.
So if you're encountering a high pilot skill ace ship with great agility, like an Inquisitor or Sunderfell that's tokened up, you want to make sure you're able to push that damage through early on in order that you can kill that ship in the following turn or two.
And then by the time I got to the range one, I would rather just be ahead in the damage race than adding damage. Then I felt like that was promoting a playstyle I didn't want, trying to encourage me to get into range one. Whereas if I had the crack shot, I'd just try to stay back as long as I could and get those range three engagements. Having Fearless, and maybe this was just a player mistake, it made me a little bit more fearless. So I ran in a bit more, and I thought that really was not playing to the strength of the aggressor and why you pick the aggressor in the first place.
Right, it's kind of counterintuitive. The aggressors really like maintaining range and using as many short maneuvers as they can to keep that range so they can keep triggering all their great abilities like auto thrusters or the IGB ability that he has between the two ships. What I saw with Fearlessness, I played a really good local player recently who wanted to use Fearlessness in a slightly different way. His list was a 46-point Scum Cath Scarlet with Fearlessness, the Dengar crew card and engine upgrade. And then he paired that up with three Black Sun Soldier Z95s. Each of those had Black Market Slicer Tools, another new upgrade from Wave 9, along with one Binaire Pirate Z95, coming to 100 points on the squad. And the list I was actually flying was the one I've been flying since I first opened up my Wave 9, was a Fenrau with Auto Thrusters, Push the Limit, and the Conquered Dawn title, along with a YV666 Trandoshan Slaver, with Dengar, Zuckus, and Forlom, which is kind of known as the party bus.
Right,
so he can lock down tokens, he can force you to reroll defense dice, and he can reroll attack dice. Really good at killing ace ships and named pilots. And then I paired that up with kind of a standard 32-point U-boat, which is a contracted scout with guidance chips, plasma torpedoes, extra munitions, Deadeye, and overclocked astromech. So my list is also at 100 points. And this Cath Scarlet with Fearlessness was surprisingly intimidating because the card Fearlessness doesn't specify primary firing arc, so it works out of both the front and rear firing arc.
Right, and here's a case where Fearlessness gets to do exactly what the ship already wants to do, which Cath really wants to get into range one with that rear firing arc and get the added dice bonus from her ability and then add the die result from Fearlessness.
Right, because it just ups, like we've said, it ups your damage potential so much. If you get a range one rear arc shot with Cath and Fearlessness, you've got a damage potential of putting out 6 hits in a single turn. And this poses a real threat if you're flying a high pilot skill, low hit point ace like Fenrau or even like a Sunderfell or Inquisitor, because suddenly anywhere you get into arc, especially that rear arc, becomes very threatening. You don't want to get too close. And it's fairly easy with a fire spray and engine upgrade to maintain some kind of arc on your enemy ships. And then the fact that ships generally have to get closer to each other as they continue to shoot at each other, unless you're flying like an Inquisitor, where you can kind of maintain range by using a lot of short bank and turn maneuvers. An ace like Sunderfell or Fenrau really depends on moving in close to push their damage out. So this can put a huge amount of pressure on the opposing player, especially when it gets down to the end game where you maybe go mano a mano Cath Scarlet versus an ace or two.
And those Z95s with the Black Market Slicer tool can really pressure your Fenrau whether or not you even want to stress yourself with Push the Limit.
Well, and those put me in a weird position too, to kind of digress here, because I had obviously my party bus and I'm using Zuckus. So when you use Zuckus's ability, he keeps taking on stress basically. So Zuckus allows you, when you're attacking, once your opponent rolls their defense dice, you can take stress tokens to have them reroll as many defense dice as you take stress tokens. If you're shooting at a Sunderfell and you roll two hits and Sunderfell rolls blank evade evade, you can say, okay, I'm going to take two stress tokens and force you to reroll those two evade results. And then oftentimes those will generate additional blanks or focus results, which can be huge, especially if they don't have tokens.
Right. And the real success of this Trandoshan Slaver build is that it doesn't matter how many stress tokens you get because your offensive output is not reliant on getting the actions to modify your attack dice because you have the Dengar crew already to do that.
Yeah, because the Dengar crew functions a lot like Predator. It allows you to roll one attack dice or two attack dice if you're shooting at a named pilot, which is basically a non-action ability. So I don't need to take an action to trigger this ability. It's always present as long as I'm shooting. So no matter how many stress tokens I've taken, I can just keep re-rolling one and often two dice when you're flying against ace pilots. Combined with the Zuckus card like we described, and Forlom, who's also a really powerful offensive ability that does not require an action.
And Black Market Slicer tools are just so well positioned right now because there's multiple ships taking advantage of the Zuckus crew card and just accumulating all of the stress tokens, pairing that with either the Dengar crew or some other way to modify attack dice like Lone Wolf and just getting piles of stress tokens. And you're seeing that in most scum builds right now. Some ship abusing that interaction. And then on the Imperial side, you have all of the ace ships using push the limit to get at least one stress token. And so those Z95s are able to deal with so much of the meta right now.
And what we're seeing really prevalent, like what you're describing, is really prevalent in the Dengaru build or the Dengar Manaru builds we've been seeing. There's some variation here, but more often than not, the Dengar component is taking on that Zuckuss crew to force rerolls of evade dice and then getting its tokens and its modification from Lone Wolf and from Manaru passing focus tokens and target locks.
And even using overclocked astromech to get even more stress tokens.
And I think there are really actually two cards right now. One of them I think has long-term value and one of them doesn't have great long-term value in the competitive meta that kind of counter this stress collecting method of play. We've got, of course, the Black Market Slicer tools, which I guess we haven't said yet. The way that works is it's an action header illicit slot, and you can take an action to roll an attack die. If the result is a hit or a crit, you can remove a stress token from a ship at range 1-2, and that ship suffers one face down damage card.
So that ship has to have at least one stress token for you to be able to use that. And generally, you don't want to remove stress tokens from ships. You want them to stress and have that penalty. But in lists where people are abusing that stress effect and it doesn't matter to them if they're stressed, yeah, throw some off and get some damage on those ships. And then conversely, the ace ships, where it will open up their dial if you take that one stress off, don't have that much hit points. So it really does hurt them if you take just one damage.
Absolutely. Like a Sundrafell, who's almost always going to be stressed because it uses push the limit to get more tokens and trigger Sundrafell's ability to add an extra focus. I do want to talk more to your point where often you don't want to remove stress tokens from other ships because that is a negative trait for them. It's kind of interesting with how Black Market Slicer tools triggers since it's actually happening as an action. So it's happening during the activation phase, often before these push the limit ships will move and get their stress tokens. I wouldn't, as a player, depend on my opponent using the Black Market Slicer tools against me. So say I'm a Sundrafell who's already stressed, and my opponent has a Z95 with Black Market Slicer tools. I'm not going to set a white maneuver on the hopes that they will move in and use their action to trigger this ability and remove my stress token.
I think that opens up some room for some pretty fun mind games on both the players.
Exactly. Well, even if you do expect them to do it, it's not always going to work because the Black Market Slicer tools requires a die roll. So even if that's what they want to do, the Z95 could move in, trigger, roll a focus or a blank, and then all of a sudden, if you set a white maneuver on the ship that has a stress token, you've kind of set yourself up for failure because you're not going to get an action.
I want to find out who the players are who have a stress soon tier that's going to be in range for a slicer tool next turn. Who dials up a red K turn? That's who I want to find.
Well, and that's allowed now in X-Wing, where you can set red maneuver because we have abilities now like the Hera crew card that allow, or Adrenaline Rush, that allow you to use red maneuvers basically when you're already stressed. Now that's a legal valid maneuver to set a red maneuver. I'm trying to think of the games where you take that risk because it's that dire that you need to...
Right. I mean, if they don't trigger the Black Slicer, then they get to set your dial because you illegally set a red maneuver while stressed. And even, actually, you probably wouldn't do this because they still have to roll that result.
That's what I'm saying.
To get it to trigger.
Yeah, so really, actually, there's not a huge penalty to a player for removing a stress token from, like, say, a Sundrafell or a Fenrau, either of them with push the limit, because that ship's probably going to perform a green maneuver anyway. I'd say they're almost foolish not to.
Right, and I don't think people are going to be putting the Black Market Slicer tools on too many high pilot skill ships. I think you're going to see it on the more lower pilot skill generics.
And I think that's really another great value to the Black Market Slicer tools. It's not a terribly reliable ability because it has a 50-50 chance, but it does come in at 1 point, which is a huge part now because we haven't had a lot of very cheap illicit slots.
Right, and because people were doing similar things with feedback array on Z95, but at 2 points, that did inhibit the list building a lot.
Yeah, and you're always suffering a damage and that ion token when you use feedback array. For those of you who aren't familiar with feedback array, that allows you to skip your attack and suffer an ion token and a damage to deal one damage to a ship at range one. So we've seen this before. A lot of people called them bug zappers, where you'd fly a swarm of the cheap scum Z95s and load them all out with this 2 point illicit that would allow them to basically force damage through on ace ships that already have low hit point totals.
All right, so listeners, they're not exactly bug zappers anymore. What is the name for the new spam of Z95s with Black Market Slicers?
I mean, it's really a meta call because it's not terribly
expensive.
No.
What are we going to call these things?
Let us know on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast what we should call a spam of Black Market Slicer Tool Z95s.
have we here?
Hey guys, we're going to interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast for just a couple minutes here because we have a big announcement to make about the show.
Radio TCX is now on Patreon.
That's right, you can now directly support the podcast by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/radioTCX. That's patreon.com/RADIOTCX.
So Tim, some of our listeners might not have heard of Patreon. Can you explain what a Patreon page is and how it works?
Yeah, so Patreon is a crowdfunding website where people can support artists and projects financially in a month-to-month basis. It's kind of like an ongoing Kickstarter, but for smaller amounts of money. So what we're asking here is, making this podcast has been a great opportunity. Carson and I both very much enjoy doing the podcast week to week. That being said, it is a substantial time and financial commitment for us.
To deliver you guys an episode each week requires hours of planning, recording, and editing.
And that comes on top of equipment and hosting fees, along with the time we have to spend to update our social media websites like Facebook and Twitter.
We've gotten great feedback from you, our listeners, about how much we appreciate the sound quality of these episodes. And that's all due to the investments in our recording equipment and the time Tim puts into editing these episodes.
So we would now like to ask you, our loyal listeners, to support the show in any way you can, and Patreon makes it really easy to do that.
And you're not just supporting us so you can keep getting the same show we've always been providing. We're also going to use this as an opportunity to expand the show into a lot of new exciting ways.
By becoming a backer on Patreon, you'll have access to a lot of new exclusive content we'd like to make. We're working on, if we hit the goals we'd like, releasing mini episodes where we really focus in on X-Wing strategy and list building, more so than we're able to do in the 25-minute to half-hour episodes we release right now. We're also looking to start recording video content where we can record X-Wing matches with popular lists and excellent players, and then also provide commentary and feedback so that new players and old players alike can learn new strategies and become better X-Wing players themselves.
But this will all only be possible through your ongoing support through our Patreon page.
To that end, by becoming a patron of Radio TCX, you'll get a lot of bonus content exclusive to Radio TCX patrons.
If we reach $75 a month in total pledges, we will be able to produce 2 mini episodes each month. These episodes will focus in on specific areas of X-Wing strategy, things we don't have time to fit into all of our normal scheduled episodes.
This would include things like list building with specific ships or specific pilots, maybe ships that don't often get played very much, or specific upgrade cards. People are wondering why they don't get used or how to use them most effectively. These are things we don't have time for to cover in our regular half-hour episodes, but we could cover in these special mini-episodes.
A potential topic for one of these mini-episodes could be debating stealth device, hull upgrade, and shield upgrade on a TIE Defender. Which one's the right one, or at what cases is a certain one better than another?
And then if we reach $125 a month in pledges, we would be able to produce once a month recorded game matches with commentary where we could show off 2 excellent X-Wing players, not necessarily us every time, but different X-Wing players flying popular lists to show what kind of strategies you could use to help new and veteran players expand their X-Wing skill set.
To reach these pledge goals, we have a few options for payment tiers so that you can contribute however you're able.
No matter what tier you pledge at, you will have access to certain things. You'll have access to all exclusive Patreon content, whether that be the mini episodes we produce or early access to the video content. You will also be entered in a monthly raffle for different X-Wing prizes. Over the years, Carson and I have acquired a lot of pretty rare X-Wing promos and tokens and different kinds of X-Wing related gear that we are happy to raffle off to patrons of the show. Patrons of the show will also be able to ask us questions for a special monthly mailbag episode where you can send us in a question maybe about a list or about how we play X-Wing or strategy, and we'll answer it on the podcast.
So our first tier is the rookie pilot tier, which is just $1 or usually about 25 cents an episode. And this gives you access to all of our Patreon exclusive content, plus gives you 1 raffle ticket into our monthly raffle swag drawing.
And then for $2 a month, you can be part of the veteran pilot tier, which is 3 raffle tickets in addition to all the patron exclusive content we just listed. So for double the cost of the first tier, you actually get 3 times as many raffle tickets each month.
So our third tier is the ace pilot tier, and this is only available to the first 25 patrons who apply for the ace tier. So here, for just $3 a month, you get all the access to our patron exclusive features, 3 raffle tickets a month, plus our Radio TCX exclusive target lock set.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about these. We had a local Minnesota business create these custom target locks for us. They are mirrored acrylics in red and blue, bearing the TCX logo and this really cool three-pronged target lock design that I don't think I've seen in any other X-Wing acrylic target locks. When we designed them, we actually themed them after the TIE Defender, so they pair very well with your new Imperial Veterans expansion.
And pictures really don't do these justice. The mirrored effect on these tokens, awesome, and it works really well with the token design. But if you want, you can see pictures on our Twitter or Facebook.
And for you listeners who are really curious, they do come pre-painted and they look great, but we do leave the masking on there. So if you do want to paint over the text on your own, you're totally free to do that.
And I actually did this with mine. I left some of the white paint on and then painted in a bright pink around the edge. This is just for me. I like having my own personal customization. And these target locks are going to be exclusive just to Radio TCX patrons.
And just as a reminder, the $3 Ace Pilot tier is limited to the first 25 patrons to apply for that tier. After that, all other backers will be able to access this content and this exclusive acrylic target lock through our $4 Squad Leader tier. And now that we've gotten through all this pledge tier stuff, we can get to the exciting part, which is announcing our raffle prizes for the first month for our patrons.
From all the loots we've acquired through our gaming, I think we've picked some pretty good prizes.
Yep, and just to make it clear to everybody, if you want to be eligible to win these prizes and have raffle tickets for these prizes, you need to become a patron of Radio TCX before September 1st. So, Carson, would you like to share the first prize for the raffle in September?
So, Tim didn't just bring back Wave 9 for the two of us. He also brought it back for our listeners. So, we're going to give one Wave 9 ship of your choice if you win that one.
And like Carson is saying, even if the wave doesn't release until the end of September, we actually have the ships right now, so we'll be able to ship those out just as soon as we determine a winner. The next prize is actually a really cool promo for those of you who weren't able to attend X-Wing Worlds this past November.
Yeah, we have the 2015 Han Solo pilot card, which is an illustration with Han and Chewie that looks pretty sweet.
And it was exclusive to Worlds attendees in 2015. And finally, the last prize we're giving away in September is probably one of the coolest promos I think that Fantasy Flight has released for X-Wing Organized Play. From the Hoth System Open, we're actually giving away one of the spot-glossed, plastic, double-sided, full-art pilot cards.
Yeah, on one side of the card, you have a full-art Epsilon Squadron pilot, and on the other side, you have a full-art Blue Squadron Novice pilot.
This was the first time Fantasy Flight had released a promo like this, and I gotta tell you, they are really cool, and if you can get your hands on one of these, I would highly recommend it.
And for a generic, where you don't need the main text area, just having that full art is awesome.
So these are the raffle prizes we're giving away for the month of September. Remember, in order to be eligible to win these prizes, you have to become a patron of Radio TCX before September 1st.
So if this all sounds appealing to you and you want to support the show, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx.
We would really appreciate it. Now, back to the show.
So let's just talk about Fen Rau, the awesome ace, pilot skill 9 from the Protectorate Starfighter expansion. We've both been playing him with Push the Limit, Concord Dawn title, and Auto Thrusters. 34 points, very efficient ace. What are your thoughts on Fen Rau?
Well, we were both excited about this ship ever since we saw that last set of preview articles. What we were really concerned about was knowing what the dial would be. Because in the preview article, they said that it's got a die comparable to a TIE Interceptor and a TIE FO, and we were trying to figure out what that meant. We had kind of figured that all the two-speed maneuvers, the straight, the bank, and the turn would be green, but beyond that, we didn't know what kind of green maneuvers that ship would have, which is really important when you're going to push the limit on a ship to know that it has a good selection of green maneuvers.
Now we have the ship, we have the dial. It has all the two-speed maneuvers green, except for, of course, that two-speed Talon roll, and then it just has a three straight that's green.
Yeah, so I think I'm actually a little disappointed by this dial.
Just I am
for
too.
What I was expecting from the ship. I was really hoping for something that would be a scum ace that was comparable to Soontir Fel, but now that I've played, 7 or 8 games with it, I really feel like it kind of fills in its own role, and it's not quite as defensive as Soontir Fel is.
Absolutely. I mean, we knew it wasn't going to be as defensive as Soontir Fel, but hopefully it makes up for it in a high damage output. Really, the struggle with the push limit, though, is having that limit on your dial. Really losing that 4 speed that the interceptors have, I found was pretty punishing, and I couldn't get Fen in as close as I wanted to without having that fast straight maneuver.
Yeah, so I think when you're comparing this ship to Soonterfell, the key things you have to look at is when Soonterfell is setting up to flank, you're often finding yourself using your combination of boost and barrel roll to set up your angle and set up your position so that you can push in hard with a four straight if you need to and then get into the fight or get outside of firing arcs. What you're missing with the Protectorate dial is that with just a three-speed green maneuver, you don't have a lot of options in where you can go once you're stressed. What that means for me in trying to set it up as a flanker, I find myself less inclined to want to both take that boost and barrel roll action as I'm trying to set up my positioning before I actually engage my opponent.
That lack of mobility, making it harder to close into range one, really punishes the Protectorate because it doesn't have as much defensive options as the Interceptor at a farther range because it doesn't have access to the evade token.
When you have like a Soonterfell who comes in typically at, let's say, 35 points with push the limit, auto thrusters, royal guard tie, and allowing him to take that second modification, which would then be typically a stealth device.
Well, we could say hull upgrade for comparability's sake.
Right, so if you get a hull upgrade, that way they're comparable in hit points. But honestly, I think these ships fly very differently. Soonterfell works very well, or just interceptors in general that are able to push and get both a focus and an evade, or in Soonterfell's case, two focuses and an evade. They work very well at range 3. So if you're getting shot at by other ships at range 3, even if you're not putting out a lot of damage on the return shot because you're missing out on target locks and you may have spent your tokens defensively, you're still probably not going to take very much damage because you've got auto thrusters triggering. If it's just a normal primary weapon, you've got an additional defense dice, and you've got this focus and this evade token. So if you take multiple shots, you have multiple different ways to modify your defense dice.
I mean, so while the Protectorate can't match the Interceptor on defense there, it definitely outpaces it on damage output. I found Fenn consistently did a lot of damage on his attack rolls. The issue was, for me, he wasn't living that long, so he only got to do a few attacks in the game, and then he died.
Well, yeah, and comparing the stat lines between the Interceptor. So an Interceptor is 3 attack dice, 3 agility dice, and 3 hull, whereas the Protectorate has 3 attack dice, 3 agility dice, and 4 hull. But I really think you need that additional hull, even though it's not really costed so much more expensive. You really need that additional hull because you are probably going to take some damage throughout the game. I think, though, Carson, like you're saying, where this ship really shines is in its offensive output, particularly with Fenn Rau. Looking at Fenn Rau's ability, when he gets into range 1, he's rolling 5 attack dice. You've got your primary weapon value of 3. You've got an additional attack dice for range 1 bonus, and then you've got an additional attack dice on top of that due to Fenn Rau's ability, where if you're within range of an opponent, whether you're attacking or defending, you roll an additional dice, which opens up some interesting offensive potential with Fenn Rau.
Now, the interesting question is, okay, your range 1 target lock focus, huge dice pool, you're obviously spending your target lock on that attack, but how often did you find you were spending that focus?
I mean, it's really circumstantial. So it's about how you set up that ship in the engagement. If I've only got one good ship in range or another ship's maybe taking a range 2 or 3 turret shot on me, I'm not so worried about saving that focus token.
Okay, so just in the case where the ship you're shooting at also has a shot back at you.
Well, that's where the advantage is. It depends very circumstantially on what the ship is. So if I get into range 1 of, say, a ship with only 2 attack dice, I'm not so worried about it because I can use my Conquer Dawn Protector title to add an extra evade result, and I'm already rolling 4 evade dice, which will generate, on average, 1 to 2 evade results, I would expect.
Okay, and if you're not in Dawn range, you're outside of their arc, and they're shooting at you, well, probably you have auto thrusters triggering at that point.
Right.
Then
it gets really tricky where you're in that range 2 area where you're not getting the extra dice from Fenn's ability and you're not getting auto thrusters, but that's true for Interceptors and other ships like that. They always have a hard time when they don't get a lot of modification at range 2.
I found Fenn dies pretty badly at range 2.
But I found myself also playing him differently. So my first couple of games, I tried to fly him like I would fly a Soonterfell, try to skirt the edge and move in really quick, but I was finding it very predictable given the limited range of green maneuvers I had. Once you start to fly Fenn more as a distraction, relying on the other components of your list, you can really see how he can start to shine because he is a huge threat. Just being able to push in all of a sudden and get 5 dice, potentially with a target lock and a focus, can be very threatening for your opponent.
And we've both been playing the same Fenn list, which is that push limit Fenn Rau with the party bus Trandoshan Slaver and then the standard contracted scout torpedo boat. Because when you have that offensive output of Fenn, you need to match that with equally offensive threats. You don't want Fenn to be your only really aggressive ship.
Well, and I think what I really like about this list is you've got three very distinct and interesting threats that your opponent has to consider, and that messes with their target priority because they have to decide which ship they're going to focus on first. If they focus on that Trandoshan Slaver with Dengar, Forlom, and Zuckuss, yes, they can push a lot of damage through and kill it because it's a low agility ship, but if they don't kill it in a single turn or two because of its high hit points, that can cause a serious problem because that ship is great at doing those three hard turns to keep its 180-degree arc available and just get out of the way.
Just bump them.
But at the same time, if you focus on that ship, suddenly you have this guy who can do a lot of damage, Fenrau at range one, and a torpedo boat who's going to launch a couple plasma torpedoes at you. If you focus on Fenrau, suddenly you've got these low pilot skill heavy hitters like the U-boat and the Trandoshan Slaver pushing out a lot of damage, which even if you focus on Fenrau, if you can't kill him, that'll be a huge problem for you.
I found, even though I lost Fen early, those other ships were able to leverage the advantage Fen got just from his few attacks. He put out a decent amount of damage that the other ships could still close out the game.
I think maybe my one issue with this list is that it comes to 100 points exactly, and I don't see myself being able to run it really any cheaper, because I like the build on Fen so far. I don't like it as much as I thought I would, but I like it enough at 34 points, and I love the party bus at 34 points, and then the standard U-boat at 32 points.
Right, and you can get away with that right now just because there's so many aces running at pilot skill 8, but if Fen becomes a big thing, 9 might just be the important place where you have to start bidding again.
Exactly. If you faced off against a bunch of ships with pilot skill 9 or even 10, suddenly it becomes a lot harder because these ships are all dependent very much on their arc. So you can still arc dodge the Trandoshan Slaver, even though it's got that additional bit of arc space on it. And getting outside of arc on the U-boat is huge too, because then it's not getting its torpedoes off. And a 2-dice turret against a ship with auto thrusters and tokens isn't likely going to do that much damage.
Now, we've been talking about push limit Fen, but I think there's some other options as far as at least just the elite pilot talent goes for Fen.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's that limited green dial, that's made me start thinking about some other cards. First thoughts go to either Predator or Lone Wolf, just to also get some modification in there.
Yeah, anytime you have 3 points to spend on an elite pilot talent, if your ship isn't a good target for push the limit, it becomes, well, should I fly Predator? Because Predator is an excellent card and valued very well.
Right, I mean, triggers on any offensive role. I mean, if you're just taking push the limit for target lock focus, if you find yourself often doing that instead of taking that boost barrel roll double action, then Predator's pretty comparable. Instead of getting stress, you open up your whole dial, but you just get one reroll instead of that whole target lock reroll.
I think the problem you then run in here is not being able to get that focus token, because even though you don't have access to an evade token, that focus token can become very important for defense. And if you're not able to take that all the time where you have to reposition to get into range one or what have you, that can become very risky, which is why I think it would be good to pair up with a ship like Manaroo.
Right. Although if you're running Manaroo, why are you not just putting Lone Wolf? Because you don't really need Manaroo to be in range to get those tokens over. We saw how effective that was with the Lone Wolf Dengar supported by Manaroo. I could see something similar happening with Manaroo supporting a Lone Wolf Fen also.
And I mean, we're just looking at our very first impressions. We've only had these ships for about a week now to test with. I think there's going to be so many more options with the Protectorate. We've got other pilots like Old Turok that have really cool abilities where they remove tokens from the opponent. And I think there's just a lot of versatility in the Protectorate. And I'm really excited to see what players can do with these ships.
Absolutely. I mean, I think even the generics give you a lot of options.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. We still have a lot more to cover when it comes to Wave 9. These are just our very first impressions. So please stay tuned and listen to these next several episodes where we'll really be able to talk about all the lists we've experimented with these new ships.
Right, and we even got our Wave 10 announcement, but we're going to wait till we have a little bit more news before we try to bite into that.
Coming up this week in Minnesota, we have another in the Sector series of tournaments. This is a series of locally run tournaments that have been going great so far. We've got another one coming up on August 20th at the Fantasy Flight Game Center in Roseville.
Always a great time to be had there.
Yeah, so check it out on Facebook.com. You can find the Sector Series information, and it's going to be a great event. Our good friend who was on the podcast last week, Jamie Kreck, is going to be TOing the event, so go say hi to Jamie and congratulate him for his top 8 performance at Gen Con. Again, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you want to keep up with the show, please like our Facebook page at facebook.com/RadioTCX.
Another way you can follow the show is on Twitter. You can follow us at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you guys really like the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review. We would really appreciate it.
This definitely helps us grow and reach a larger audience.
And of course, we obviously have opened up the Patreon page now. Please, if you really like the show, consider becoming a patron of Radio TCX by going to patreon.com/radiotcx. That's patreon.com/radiotcx.
Hurry up and get those sweet target locks.
Have a great week, guys.